Now we turn to a story of a formerly incarcerated woman who was trained for a job but couldn't get hired after she was released.
My first years in prison were not the best. I was mad at the world and kind of really struggling with this 10-year sentence.
Amika Moda was sentenced to 10 years in prison for vehicular manslaughter that occurred when she was high on meth.
I don't know what my turning point was, but it was gradual. And my turning point, I think it started as like an internal process of just focusing on self-care and what I was going to do to shift things in my life.
Marisa Lagos, a politics reporter at KQED in San Francisco, helps tell Moda's story.
As time went on, she got very involved, and she ended up becoming a firefighter at a women's prison in Chowchilla, which is a pretty rural area of California. She was one of a team of women who would actually go out from the prison and respond within 30 miles to any incident that needed mutual aid.
I think the reason that I really wanted to be there was because it was like the best thing I could do for myself in there, right? And I also knew we would be in service in the community.
And she did this, you know, for her whole time in prison, topping out as an engineer at a whopping 53 cents an hour. So a lot of hard work, but obviously when you're an inmate, you don't make a lot of money doing these things.
But I just kept hearing, you'll never get hired by a city department. It's just not possible. They won't hire felons. So that was kind of what had been instilled in me, and I left kind of thinking that too.
Sure enough, when she came home to Oakland, where her dad had actually been taking care of her older children, she realized that no city fire department would actually even entertain the idea of hiring a felon.
And applied at, you know, Amazon, Starbucks, a number of places like I found off of Craigslist, and was just not hearing back from folks, not even getting interviews, which was really interesting. But I also had a really huge gap on my resume, and a lot of the things a lot of folks face coming home. It's like, how do we account for this dead time?
Moda eventually did find a job, and now she works at a nonprofit helping other formerly incarcerated women. And that's where I picked up the story with Marisa.
This is something that, you know, I think we hear a lot about, but it's really interesting to talk to somebody who's so, sums it up in the sense that she was working at this job and she literally cannot apply for the exact same job, which she is completely qualified for and had, let's say, like a ton of training that the state paid for. You know, you don't just become like walk into a fire station and become a firefighter. These women had to go through an intense training process, which is the same one that anyone at Cal Fire, you know, the state fire agency that fights our wildfires, or any city firefighters would actually go through themselves.
And I want to talk a little bit about the impact that this has just on someone's life. You know, we hear a lot today about lives being ruined, you know, particularly among prominent men. In this Me Too moment, and I keep bringing it back to, you know, someone's life could really be ruined by not just serving their time, but not being able to have a life after they've served their time. And I'm wondering, you know, is there anything that folks can do that have a criminal history, that served their time, you know, that did everything they were supposed to do to sort of get past this?
So, I mean, the reason I came across Amika's story is because a group called Californians for Safety and Justice in California, who actually have run some other ballot measures and legislation that did try to sort of reduce some penalties. So, for example, they ran Proposition 47, which reduced a lot of drug possession charges from felonies to misdemeanors, which, of course, is huge, right? Because the felony issue is the biggest one. They commissioned a report, and what they found was that in California alone, there are 4,800 laws restricting what people can do after they get out of prison. And we're talking everything from the job stuff we've discussed to housing, adopting a child, coaching a little league. You know, there's just a gamut of sort of life options that the rest of us would consider totally normal that aren't open to them. And so they're really starting a campaign that they're hoping will lead to a change in law, to just raise public awareness, because they don't feel like people really know about all these limitations. And so they think that this might actually, there might be an opening here. And I will say that from my conversations with prosecutors in California, I think politically that it's actually possible that there could be some agreement between law enforcement and these reform advocates, that there could be, you know, some more narrowly tailored legislation that would help people really clear these records.
Those things are important, right? To be able to give folks some sort of reset button as far as being able to obtain you know, employment that will give us livable wages and careers.
And I'm sure there's also another side to this, which says that what balance can we strike between helping people move on after they've served their time and public safety? Is there any consideration to the type of crimes maybe that someone, you know, may have committed and whether or not they are able to move on more quickly or have these records, you know, whether it's cleared or expunged in some way? Does it matter if they were violent crimes, for example?
Absolutely. I mean, I talked to a couple prosecutors in the Bay Area, one of whom, Steve Wagstaff, is in San Mateo County, and he's a fairly conservative guy who has really fought against some of the reforms we've seen in the criminal justice arena. And he said, look, I think that this is a conversation worth having.
Looking at the report, looking at their 7 recommendations that they made, I certainly see why the times have changed and it is time to upgrade it. We have 2 things that go back decades. Number one is the request to have your record sealed. The other is by appealing to the governor, and those are the 2 present ones. I do agree for many, many crimes with a passage of time, yes, that there ought to be a third avenue where people can get that record where it's really cleaned off, not just done in name, but it's really cleaned off. I do support that approach to it for certain crimes.
I think that, you know, I talked to George Gascon, who's the DA in San Francisco, who has been a little more liberal on these issues. And he had actually been looking at this prior to this report coming out. Both of them said that they think that this is a conversation that if, you know, it's had in a fair way and whatever policy comes out of it is narrowly tailored, and that there might be some options for prosecutors to push back if, you know, they felt like a certain case was different, that could be a really strong option. What's interesting to me is that district attorneys are even open to that conversation because they've been some of the biggest critics of a lot of the reforms we've seen being pushed in California in recent years.
Marisa Lagos is a political reporter for KQED and co-host of the podcast Political Breakdown. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Tanzana.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Babbel, a language app that teaches real-life conversations in a new language like Spanish, French, or German. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons are available in the App Store or online at Babbel. BABBEL.com.
And Progressive Insurance, providing tools designed to help customers consider options from multiple insurers. Comparisons available at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive.
Want to bring The Takeaway with you on the go? Subscribe to The Takeaway as a podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.